Hello and welcome everyone to Chillin' in the State House. It is a full podcast today. We are finally using all four mics, and that is because Andrew Ball is back with us for episode number 100.
Woo! Woo! In case you don't remember who Andrew Ball is, which I don't blame you if you don't.
If you've been listening since the beginning, you'll know Andrew as the...
Yes, if you've gone back and listened to previous podcasts, as you should have.
Yeah. Andrew, you started, with help, the Chillin' in the State House podcast.
Yeah, I had to give credit to Titus Wu, my former colleague, who had the idea for the concept, and... We kept it going with you, and you and Jack have kept it going with John, which is awesome.
You were a co-host and producer and award-winning.
Producer is doing a lot of work at that. Yes, the award.
Award-winning, and we're vying for another award this year, right?
Yeah, I don't know when we find out if the Kansas Press Association or whoever's doing the judging for them this year will... make a two in a row for us.
We're going to learn whether this award is like the Oscars or whether it's like the Emmys where people win year after year.
But I'm Jason Alatid with the Topeka Capital Journal.
I'm Jack Harville with the Topeka Capital Journal.
I'm John Hanna with the Associated Press.
I'm Andrew Ball, Topeka Capital Journal Emeritus. Is that
Where are you now, Andrew?
Newspaper, right?
Weekly newspaper, okay. Online. Yeah, I work for the Cap Times, Capital Times, which is one of two newspapers in Madison, Wisconsin, covering state government and politics, which in Wisconsin, there's never a dull moment on either of those things. But, like in Kansas, but with the added benefit of the presidential race.
That's right. You're in a battleground state.
I know. It's a very different experience because, my first year here was 2020 when obviously there was a very consequential presidential election nationally, but in Kansas, it's always a fait accompli, so it's weird to have candidates and campaigns interested in your state again.
That's what the presidential preference primary is supposed to do.
Did not quite work out that way. The turnout was what? Maybe it was in single digits.
Well, I calculated how much it cost per vote, and it was like $35 per vote spent on this election.
But still, it would be worth noting that still more people participated in it than participated even in the biggest caucuses in 2020. So... Or 2016.
That is not a dirty term on this podcast. Caucuses, big caucuses. That's what the state used for several years to conduct presidential primaries.
And where
you have a bunch of people in one room and maybe some yelling or shouting and speeches, and you move to the side of who you support, or you might have... I think that's the way the Democrats did it, and I think the Republicans did a paper ballot.
Well, actually, the Republicans did a paper ballot in 2016. They had nothing in 2020 because, of course, Donald Trump was running for re-election. In 2020, the Democrats went to a mail ballot election because of the pandemic. And memory serves, they got about 73,000 participants, which was really pretty big for them. Double what they'd had almost in 2016. We joke about it, but the turnout, maybe I think 140,000 people, if I'm remembering correctly, was still bigger than any caucus. So I guess people could argue it was a success because, if you'd had caucuses, how many fewer thousands of people would participate? It just seems like it wasn't worth the $5 million in spending, right? It was about $5
million. Yeah, it was about $5 million. And also, it probably for the average voter isn't worth going to the polls just to make a statement. The candidates already won. So
sure, and so maybe there will be some discussion of going back to caucuses. Maybe there will be some discussion of moving it to February, which would make it more of a deal.
And part of the reason why caucuses are such a challenge, is you have to have the entire county population in one place. Well, all the registered Republicans or Democrats who want to participate have to be in one place.
Yeah.
And finding a large enough area. In 2016, I went to the Riley County Republican caucus at Manhattan High School, where they went into the gym, and it was a pretty packed gym, but you can't fit all the registered Republicans in there.
Well, and my recollection is in 2016, one of the caucuses was at Highland Park High School in East Topeka, and they had to have it outdoors in a stadium setting because they had lots and lots of people. And of course, interestingly, Bernie Sanders won the Kansas caucuses that year by a pretty hefty margin.
The fun thing about the 2016 caucuses in Manhattan was it was on Fake Patty's Day.
Ah.
Which seems to pose a whole new set of problems.
Yes. Yeah,
aside from election administration.
There was definitely some pregame drinking, going to do your Democratic duty, then going back to drinking again.
Well, and you know, the adage when Kansas was a prohibition state, William Allen White famously said, Kansans will stagger to the polls to vote dry. So there you go.
Literally.
Literally, yes. So, but they had a primary in Wisconsin, right?
It's on, it's actually coming up on Tuesday, and it will be punctuated by Donald Trump's first visit to Wisconsin. He's going to Green Bay. I will also be going to Green Bay to follow him. But President Biden has made a few visits. So we already are feeling like we are the center of attention, which maybe is an unhealthy amount of ego for a state to have politically at this point in things.
But. So like, do they have like MAGA cheesehead things?
So it's funny.
Is it a local adaptation, or is it just the red caps we know?
It is funny. I was doing a story in rural Wisconsin, actually on legislative races, because Wisconsin will have a whole new legislative map. And for the first time it will in a while, that will mean competitive legislative races, because the old ones were deemed to be gerrymandered. But I was out in rural southwest Wisconsin, and there was a big sign that said cheese 1 mile. And below it, there was a smaller sign tacked on that said, "Let's go, Brandon." And I think if you want one picture that kind of sums up where Wisconsin is at these days, that photo kind of perfectly does it. It encapsulates things pretty well.
Well, Wisconsin also has a Democratic governor to go with its Republican legislature, although his margin of victory was pretty healthy in 2022, right?
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, people have kind of asked, like, what's different between Kansas and Wisconsin? And I say, you know, when it comes to the legislative dynamics, there's a lot of similarities. The one big difference is there is not a veto-proof majority in both chambers in Wisconsin. One chamber, state Senate, has it. The state assembly does not. So they are generally able to sustain vetoes by their governor, which I know in Kansas, historically has been a challenge for Democrats. And it's kind of like Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football every election cycle in terms of breaking the supermajority. But beyond that, I mean, it is a lot of kind of brinksmanship on both sides and trying to find that compromise. And I mean, I'm sure, want to talk about taxes and what's been going on there. But that's been a big question in Wisconsin, too, is legislative leaders want, I mean, I think in their pie in the sky world, a flat tax like in Kansas, or at least a pretty dramatic change to the tax structure, and that's been a non-starter. So it doesn't seem like that got across the line this session, but you know, there are a lot of parallels, and the longer the more I get into it in Wisconsin, you know, the more little things pop up that make me think of Kansas.
Well, I guess that would be a good chance to talk about taxes now, because we did have our Democratic governor, Laura Kelly, veto the tax plan put together by our Republican-led legislature, the flat tax bill.
But don't call it a flat tax.
Yeah, there's been some consternation over calling it a flat tax. Some people prefer single rate, and then they'll say, well, some people pay zero income tax, so it's technically a
And again, rate. I say, if I will call it a double rate when they put the zero in statute as a tax rate.
But the flat tax.
What is it that Vic Miller said? I double dog dare you to do it.
That was on the LAVTRF.
Yeah, that was on the LAVTRF. But I, you know, They can just put zero in the statute. They can do what they want when they're writing laws.
So, we went into session knowing that tax cuts would be a major priority. Republicans said it was their number one priority. And we knew they would put together some kind of package similar to last year's and include a flat tax. And they did that. I think they did it in the second week of session. Then House and Senate passed it, sent it to the governor after waiting until the very last day to do it.
Well, and they had the big ceremony where they signed it at a news conference, you know, this ministerial step that they take dozens and dozens of times a year. They got into the ceremonial Secretary of State's office, and they had all the Republicans, plus Marvin Robinson, I think, was there, the Democrat from KCK. And, you know, they made a big deal of it, and then they didn't deliver the bill for another 3 days or 4 days.
And then the governor vetoed it, and then the House waited until, I think,
almost the last day
to try the override, and they failed. A couple Republicans voted no. And after that happened, House Speaker Dan Hawkins essentially acknowledged that he wouldn't have the votes for a flat tax. That's pretty much what he said to you, Jack, 2 weeks ago. Or maybe it was just last week when they introduced their new
plan. It all kind of runs together.
Yeah. And so the House put together its new plan with two income tax brackets instead of three. And after some finagling and haggling and amendments and comparisons to grabbing too many cookies out of the cookie jar, the House this week at about 10 a.m., 10 p.m. on Tuesday.
You wish it was 10 a.m.
Yeah, it all kind of runs together.
It was about 10 p.m. on Tuesday when they finished putting together their tax package, and then they came back at 10 a.m. to do the final vote.
And it was 123 to nothing, which never happens with a tax bill. And, of course, obviously there were probably provisions various lawmakers didn't like, but they were sending a very clear message to the Senate about the amount of support that bill has. And of course, the Senate declared the bill materially altered and sent it back to committee. So that was their responsive message. It'll be hashed out in conference committee, of course.
But the hashing out in conference committee will. The biggest question is, will they do a single rate or a dual rate? And if they do anything that is a flat tax, they probably lose Democratic support in the House and perhaps the handful of Republicans who opposed the flat tax.
The key question on that is going to be, how much do House Republicans stick with the two bracket proposal? In other words, if the Senate, and this sometimes happens in negotiation, one side will say, no, we want you to run our plan to see how much support it would get. Will the House do what chambers sometimes do and really reject something to get the other side to negotiate? Or would they just go ahead and pass it and wait for the governor to veto it? I mean, you know, the question here is how does this play in an election if there are no tax cuts? The other thing that is interesting here is that revenues, tax collections have started to soften. They've been soft over the past, 4 months? And they've fallen short of expectations. Yeah, so
Andrew left and then we stopped bringing in as much tax revenue.
Yeah. It was all that frisbee golf he did here.
Yeah, I mean, and I won't co-opt the conversation too much, but we're saying the same thing in Wisconsin, and I think states nationally are now starting to prepare for the possibility of, you know, the gravy train kind of coming to an end, which, I mean, really since the COVID pandemic kind of petered out and the economy got back to quote-unquote normal, we were seeing like eye-popping surpluses back when I got the monthly January first of the month emails.
And some of that is just how much state budgets were goosed by federal funds that are now going away. That was a big thing. And of course, one of the things that higher inflation does is it inflates your sales tax revenues and you know, incomes possibly a little go up, and that helps income taxes. So there's a sense – you know, and maybe the state just got a little optimistic in its estimates. And so, but it's an interesting kind of backdrop to all this because, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do with all this money they have. And, you know, the census, you can't go into election with these huge balances and not have cut taxes.
And Governor Kelly has threatened to call a special session.
Yes.
If the legislature doesn't send her a tax bill, she's
right.
Just what the press corps wants, I'm sure.
Yeah, I will.
Topeka is so fun in July, let me tell you.
Well, we wouldn't know exactly when it would happen. If it would be July right before primaries.
I would suspect it would be July right before the primaries.
Or if it would be May when everybody has vacations planned.
That would just be mean.
And we don't know
as somebody who has a vacation planned.
Yeah, you guys need to get your vacation. Tell the Chaos Ledge world now when your vacations are, so make sure they don't schedule the special session then.
Yeah, I tried that with the infamous Thanksgiving week special session, and somehow my pleas fell on deaf ears.
That one wound up being less. I know it's
it was only a day, right?
Yeah, they got everything done in a day, so it could have been much worse.
Yeah, I was supposed to drive to Texas and. For a week-long Thanksgiving trip.
Did you go the next day, or did you go accost Kelly at the Christmas tree delivery?
So it was a Monday of Thanksgiving week that we had a special session. My introduction to the legislature was, did I watch the Senate and you watched the House?
You watched the Senate because that's when Rob Olson like whipped out the second shooter theory on the Senate floor like an hour into debate, and we just went, this is going to be a long day.
Second shooter theory?
Yeah, about the Kennedy assassination.
I believe
Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I'm just going to say that.
Thank you for shutting down conspiracy theories on the
podcast. Is that a chilled in the state house, like party line?
No. It's only a personal thing. Having had parents who parked in the school book depository parking lot that day, I feel highly qualified to opine on the Kennedy assassination.
So it was Monday special session, and then Tuesday. Monday night we had heard from Republicans that the Democratic governor had communicated she would sign the bill if it were in a certain way.
And I think she put out a statement at 11 p.m.
Yeah, and she had it communicated to Democratic lawmakers.
That's right, and they were not happy.
But yeah, that was part of the bipartisan looking approach that she tended to do sometimes in it to help her reelection.
Well, that Tuesday morning was the annual Christmas tree delivery
to the governor's Christmas mansion. Tree deliveries.
And I don't know how well attended they are normally, but that one was pretty well attended because we all wanted to ask the governor about if she would sign the bill or not.
Did she? Answer the question?
Well, John, you were the one who tried to get it in a couple different ways.
Yeah, well, the lump of coal, I think I alluded to lumps of coal.
Well, you tried to ask the question we all wanted, and you were told on-topic questions only. So you had some variation of what would you say to Democrats who think you deserve a lump of coal for?
Yeah, see, a Christmas theme. I can play the game. You know, I can ask holiday themed questions.
I think
it wasn't as much fun as the time when people were waiting for Sam Brownback to get confirmed as the U.S. ambassador for religious freedom, and Jeff Collier, then the lieutenant governor, was starting to take up more work, it seemed. And I can't remember which one of them showed up at the Christmas tree lighting in the state house, but then there was a spate of Kansas has two governors story. And of course, the Brownback people worked to kind of squelch that idea that even as he was waiting, power was transitioning to eventually Governor Collier. So that was an interesting Christmas event.
I didn't mean to take us down the road of just reminiscing about.
Oh, it's the 100th episode. We can reminisce.
Well, my favorite time of you trying to make a off-topic question on topic was at some veterans event. I think the governor was signing a proclamation or something. Was it on vaccines or vaccine mandates?
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Yeah.
Or it was one of the like sweeping anti-COVID bills.
It was, I think, ivermectin. And you asked the governor, like, would veterans want vaccines or ivermectin or something like that?
You know, ivermectin is still around as an issue. Apparently, the CDC or somebody lost a lawsuit and had to take down some of their best tweets about ivermectin. There was one tweet from the federal government that was like, "You're not a horse, you're not a cow. Come on, people, stop it." So that yes, ivermectin.
Well, and
what
still
was the
hydroxychloroquine?
Yes.
Hydroxychloroquine.
We are out of practice on saying these.
Yeah, I mean, boy, the political effects of the pandemic linger, but the language does not.
Well, ivermectin was back, at least in one of my stories, I think, earlier this session when they advanced the bill on patient visitation rights.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
And the spouse, the widow of the person the bill was named after, one of her complaints was that wherever he was not going to allow him to be treated with ivermectin. And she did not like that the doctor said something like, "He's not a horse."
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of, I think the issue with ivermectin was that people were getting, they couldn't get the stuff that was processed for humans. So they were going into like farm supply stores and getting the stuff for cows and horses and then taking massive doses of it, which actually could be pretty dangerous. I think heart problems or something, if I'm remembering correctly. But yeah, that was a interesting moment of the pandemic.
And because I can't think of a good transition.
well, you could draw out a Disney song. Yes. Well, speaking of medicine and things that go against the recommendations of major American medical groups.
So we have some gender-affirming care news in Kansas, but Andrew, has it been an issue in Wisconsin?
Not really. So one of the chambers passed a bill to ban gender-affirming care. It kind of just didn't go anywhere in the other chamber with the knowledge that the governor would veto it. He vetoed a ban on transgender athletes in girls and women's sports, which really took me back to Kansas, where that bill was enacted over the governor's veto last year. But yeah, it hasn't, you know, that the, like I said earlier, that veto has remained stronger than it sounds like it is going to be in Kansas potentially.
Well, it's close in Kansas.
Well, first, when you left, we were in the early stages of the SB 180 lawsuit.
Oh, don't I know it?
Yeah, you had lots of coverage on the differences between the Kobach interpretation and the Kelly interpretation. I think that's the first reference to Kobach. So Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach.
Yes.
And it wasn't until this January that we had oral arguments on a preliminary injunction.
And the judge issued that preliminary injunction.
And the ACLU has filed an appeal. Meanwhile, the Attorney General's office has filed a motion for summary judgment.
Yeah.
And that's the case dealing with driver's license and gender marker changes for transgender
people. Yeah, and in addition, as of September, the state is no longer changing the listing for – it's formerly the listing for sex on birth certificates and driver's licenses to match transgender people's gender identities. Now we've got this – pretty highly likely ban on gender-affirming care for minors, puberty blockers, hormone treatments, and of course, surgeries, although surgeries for minors are pretty uncommon, I think everybody admits.
Well, so John, gender-affirming care was something they tried to ban last year, and a handful of Republicans – sided with Democrats, so it failed.
Right, about 12 in the House and 3 in the Senate, if I'm remembering correctly.
And Republican leadership brought it back this session. It was early March, I believe, when we had hearings on it, and it looked like it was going to move pretty quickly, but there was a hang-up. And I think you were the first to report what the hang-up was.
Well, what this thing had more legs this year for a couple of reasons. The House members felt they had more time to look at it, and of course, months and months of other stuff had gone on. And so that got most of the Republicans who'd voted no last year to vote yes. So that got them up to about 84 votes, probably. And a key in that was the change from John Epley, who's an Atchison doctor. He was no last year, and he moved to yes. The other thing is this development in England, where the National Health Service is, it's been mischaracterized as a ban on puberty blockers and hormone treatments, but the NHS in England has said it will not cover those treatments routinely. They can still happen if you will do them in a private clinic or private pay, but they're not a part of the treatment regimen that the government will pay for at cost, if I'm remembering. And they had this statement that they didn't think the evidence showed the efficacy and safety of it, which, of course, has been widely quoted in all of these debates across the U.S. So those things were happening. But, yes, they were on track to send this bill to the governor with a single vote in the Senate, and then it went to conference. And what happened was that the Republican leadership decided at the last minute, let's pull it and let's put something in it to get Brenda Dietrich's vote, the former Auburn-Washburn school superintendent from Topeka. And what they did was they put the phase out. You have doctors have until the end of the year to phase their patients off of treatment. If they believe that's necessary and there's some paperwork you'll have to file. And then Brenda Dietrich, when they voted this time around, she got up. Her voice was shaking. And she said this was a very hard vote. But what she said was people in her district are upset at the idea of gender affirming surgery, gender changing in their minds, surgery on minors, which again does not happen that often. And she said their anger is palpable, and I've always agreed with their position on that, but I was always concerned about the medical implications of forcing people on treatment to stop immediately. And so that's gotten them 27 votes in the Senate. So it looks like for the moment, unless some people reconsider, it looks like this bill now will have the 2/3 majorities.
I think there is a potential hiccup in the House because one member has been on a prolonged absence due to health issues, I believe.
And they'll have to have everybody there. And yeah, so that is the one hiccup. There are two interesting things about this debate. First of all, transgender rights activists, young transgender adults, do not believe that this is where the legislature is going to stop, that they fully expect another bill next year to advance that age past 18. And indeed, Brenda Landwehr, who a Wichita Republican who's the chair of the House Health Committee, said in her remarks in the House that if she had her way, she'd wait until the adult brain is fully developed, which is probably mid 20, 25, 26. And that kind of signals where the debate might go. And so what we're seeing, interestingly enough, is that there are some students at the University of Kansas who are now trying to get the university to put pro-transgender rights language into the student code so that faculty and staff would be told to use students' preferred names and pronouns. The university would assert that, students have a right to establish their identities. There's some language in there about being gender inclusive on bathrooms, that sort of thing. And I can't, we haven't seen any reaction from the Attorney General or the legislature yet, but I Well, I can't imagine it going over well with them.
The Attorney General, what was it, like a month ago, Jack, that you wrote about him having sent letters to, I think, six school districts, four of which, including Topeka Public Schools, kind of rebuked his thoughts on use of pronouns and other inclusive policies.
Yeah, that he said they had policies that would keep information from parents about someone's gender identity. It was seems to be on a case by case. If the kid didn't feel safe letting their parents know, but he reached out to six schools. I think two of them did change their policies
in the Witch Diary, if I'm remembering.
Yeah, and the other ones didn't. It doesn't seem like there's a law broken, so I don't know. Kobach didn't cite any law being broken, so I don't know what the follow-up would be.
I mean, there was a column from Insight Kansas. It's a group of political science professors across the state, and a column from one of them, I think it's the Newman University professor, who basically said there is no law right now explicitly saying what the schools are doing is wrong. And there have been some court rulings one way, some the other way. So as it stands right now, there isn't much to back up the Attorney General's position. Well, but it is something that very well could change.
Well, there's some U.S. Supreme Court decisions generally about parental rights that suggest you have an expansive constitutional right to raise your child as you see fit. There was a district court decision in Kansas where this kind of policy came up, and the judge basically said a blanket policy of not telling parents is impermissible. You could, in theory, she said, have a policy that does it on a case-by-case basis if you can demonstrate actual harm and not some theory or assumption on your part. So that's a little unsettled, but I think that's what the Attorney General is relying on. I mean, has this kind of issue come up in Wisconsin, Andrew?
I think it has been more of a local issue. There have been some lawsuits filed locally on districts not using the right pronouns, also bathroom and locker room use and allegations of discrimination there. I assume at some point we will see legislation get more traction in the statewide on that. But I think we're not quite as far along as you all are. Though I guess it sounds like legislation hasn't quite gotten there here either.
No. Okay. But that, I mean, those are things that could happen, say, next year. Again, nobody in the LGBTQ rights community expects this kind of national movement on the right to burn itself out. Although what's interesting is that in some ways immigration and what's going on at the border is starting to become the thing for Republicans to focus on.
Well, thinking of other issues on the right, has DEI, I was thinking I've seen some stories from you on that.
Yeah, definitely. It has been a big deal. Last year, Wisconsin does their budget a little differently than Kansas. In Wisconsin, a budget is a biennial budget, so it covers 2 years. Last year was a budget year, and as part of that, the assembly speaker said the University of Wisconsin system will not get one more nickel until they get rid of their DEI program, and they tried to cut some funding. They eventually had a way maybe for them to get it back, but that kind of stalled. And it finally led to there being a big deal announced in the winter where the UW would repurpose a lot of DEI programs or DEI personnel. There were some other things like University of Wisconsin-Madison has a program to recruit and retain faculty of color that would end. Some things like that. In exchange, the UW would get some more money. They would also get a bunch of new building projects that they wanted, some things like that. What was interesting is the first time the Board of Regents actually rejected the deal because they thought it would be harmful to students of color, women, veterans, folks with disabilities that are targeted by these programs. They reconsidered a few days later after, I think, some intense lobbying from the UW system itself and from some put out legislators, and it wound up passing. And we've kind of been on that issue. We have been a little bit of ground zero for some of the DEI stuff, not as much as like maybe Florida, but it sounds like Kansas is taking a more scrutinizing approach.
Well, we've got a provision in the budget that the Senate added, $35.7 million would be withheld. And then the Regents universities, the six of them, their CEOs, presidents, would have to go before the State Finance Council and certify that they'd gotten rid of a list of DEI programs or initiatives. And there's a bill that actually essentially says you can't make somebody fill out give you a statement on their views on DEI.
And the budget provision was on the Senate side. I think the bill passed the House.
So that's kind of out there and interesting.
But of course, a budget proviso could be vetoed.
Yes. And so could a bill.
And a bill could be vetoed.
Well, and what's interesting to me is conservatives are feeling their oats on this issue because, of course, last year the U.S. Supreme Court basically outlawed affirmative action programs in college admissions. And, you know, Chris Kobach, the attorney general, and some other people nationwide, many of them Republican attorneys general, have read that decision pretty broadly and suggested it applies to diversity initiatives at big corporations, or in this case, the argument from J.R. Clays, who's a Salina senator who came up with this diversity provision, who's also an advisor to Kobach, basically their argument that anything that is explicitly race-based is not allowed. So like, for example, an explicitly a scholarship program specifically for Black or Hispanic students is not allowed. You could rejigger the scholarship program using different criteria, and if it happens to give the money mostly to Black or Hispanic students, then that's probably permissible as long as you didn't explicitly say we're doing this for Black and Hispanic students. That's kind of the argument.
And thinking of budget provisos, it might be a good chance to talk about where we are in the legislative process right now, not just on the budget, but this current week, Friday.
Friday is Drop Dead Day, my favorite deadline name.
And that's when bills have to be out of the second chamber.
That was this current week. And then this is where they have to be through conference and done, most of them. And they can't come up again if they're not. Although the legislature can bring up what the legislature wants to bring up.
So this past week, the House and Senate were on the floor passing dozens of bills. You can read about some of them at cjonline.com. Other ones, they were disagreeing on changes. Some were substantive disagreements, like tax cuts or like the budget. I think the budget was technically 2 weeks ago, but
yeah.
Others were minor changes made just to send a bill to conference to use as a shell. I don't know why it's such a pet peeve for me when people get up and be like, oh, we don't know what changed. We need to go to conference and see what changed. And it's they changed the enactment date
in order to get it to conference. Well, and because what's going to happen is, for example, if you have one bill dealing with criminal law, they're going to stuff a bunch of other stuff into it and make it a big omnibus bill. Same thing with taxes, same thing with elections. And you're going to get these monster bills, these Frankenstein bills where they're, you know, 100 pages long and stuffed with 10 or 12 proposals.
Well, and in some of those cases, it's because I think one of the criminal justice bundles in the House, it was, you know, maybe five of these bills the Senate never took up, so we're going to put them into this bundle to force it.
The way they've been doing things is You know, obviously the rule is if it passes one chamber, it can be discussed in conference committee. And so now they've evolved this system where they deliberately have one thing, something pass only one chamber and then discuss it in conference. And it's, you know, it's part of this evolution slash disease that the legislative process has, where there now have become a couple of shortcuts, big ways of shortcutting things because they don't think they have as much time as they need to deal with things. Of course, you know, critics would point out that they do pro forma sessions where they don't do any substantive business nearly every Friday of the session and often on Mondays as well. And, you know, to be fair, members like that because they get to go home early and get home Friday, as opposed to Saturday, at the end of the day, Saturday, and many of them can drive back Monday as opposed to having to do it Sunday. So it's a life, you know, it's a life balance thing for legislators.
Who, by the way, are going to be getting a big pay raise.
Well, you know, I think that's an issue in the budget. That may be stuck somewhere in the Senate bill.
I think the Senate did get it in as a proviso. I imagine.
Would they count on Laura Kelly to veto that?
Andrew, was that yeeted out of the budget?
So many things got yeeted out of the budget over the years.
Yeeted? What is that phrase?
You need to get on TikTok more, John. No, I think...
TikTok's too damn loud!
TikTok is way beyond yeeted at this point, probably.
Yeah.
That was so 2022.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't suggest I get on TikTok. That would not be pretty. I do have a TikTok account, however.
And you have a video of your turtle on there.
Yes, I do. That was the last thing I did on TikTok.
That's the only thing I want to see on TikTok.
Turtle videos. The turtle is not as loud as most TikTok videos, which is my objection to TikTok, is it's just too loud.
I think my last TikTok video was the governor's state of the state when legislators sang happy birthday to her, which was either a year and a half or 2.5 years ago.
Listen to us talk about how old we are.
Remember, because it got postponed because she had COVID and it wound up being on her birthday.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't she didn't have COVID. They just thought she did.
They thought she had COVID.
She had a positive test. And
was that
right?
The one? Was that the deal where you were trying to find out or somebody was mad that they told you she had COVID and you wrote about
that
it?
I think that was in 2020.
Okay, because I did file an open records request.
That was related to that. 2020 or early 2021. That was the most fun I've had
filing an open records request. I wanted all the communications, text, emails that had your name in it.
I still have a copy of that somewhere. I should frame it.
Yeah,
my girlfriend's talking about how we need more decor in our place, and I think that's exactly what she's talking about.
Yes,
you see, when you said decor, I thought you were going to say decorum, and there has been a push for more decorum in this place.
They're starting to
since
gabble
you covered
people.
That floor speech by
the Ford Carlin. Oh God, that's taking me back.
I mean, during the gender affirming care debate, we had a challenge of decorum.
Ford Carr went down and the gist of his speech was essentially, I don't really understand this, the whole transgender thing, and I'm really not hip to it. I'm not woke like that, but it's not any of my damn business and we ought to leave these folks alone. And then he said, history has taught us that, you know, the people who are going to go after one marginalized group are eventually going to come after me and people who look like me. Representative Carr is black. And that really upset some people in the House.
I think it was Emil Bergquist.
Yes.
Who challenged.
He challenged. He thought that was that people were being called hateful and racist and he objected to that.
And Susan Ruiz, a Democrat from Shawnee, when she was talking on the floor, she She translated the votes of Republicans to mean that they know better than parents. And Speaker Pro Tem Blake Carpenter
told her not to impugn people's motives.
And her retort was, it's just fact.
Yes. So it got a little tense.
And I was a little surprised that it looked like Vic Miller was doing math. Vic Miller, the House Minority Leader, a Democrat from Topeka. It looked like he was doing math either on a calculator or on his phone from the well during a tax debate, which could potentially be construed as a prop.
And they didn't do anything.
Yeah, and when a copy
of the bill is a prop.
Yeah, and when they were talking about a porn bill this week, John Carmichael motioned to a painting on the ceiling of the House chamber that shows a fully exposed boob.
Words I don't think I ever expected to hear on Chilling in the State House.
I guess the House chamber wasn't considered a prop either.
Yes. Well, and somebody said people need to stop talking about that exposed breast on the ceiling, or somebody's going to come along and want to alter the artwork. I mean, back in the day in Kansas, in the rotunda, there were depictions of bare-breasted women, and there were some objections to that. And of course, the goddess of grain and fertility is not on the State House dome because that back in the day when they were considering it, legislators thought she was too much of a tramp to be a good example.
Well, and I thought that they didn't want to. If you were going to put a religious figure on the dome, they didn't want it to be a Roman goddess.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't you do the Virgin Mary or something like that if you're going to put a religious figure?
That's
a Christian symbol, and there are non-Christians, of course, in Kansas, and so that wouldn't be very ecumenical.
You know, thinking of religious figures, we do have a new law to authorize a Emil Capon.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting. I'm be interested to see how his bid, the people's bid to get him declared a saint, goes. The Korean War chaplain from Wichita, right?
Well, has a school named that, I believe, ordained through the Wichita Diocese, but he was originally from Pilsen, I believe, in Marion County, which we have also talked about.
Inspiring, basically an inspiring spiritual figure, ministered to soldiers and prisoners of war, and then died during the Korean War. Yep. In custody of the North Koreans, if I'm remembering.
I believe that's a pretty succinct.
So.
I'm.
Was he as tall as Eisenhower, though? How would his statue look next to the Ike statue on the ground?
Well, it also could be a mural.
True.
And I imagine the private fundraising won't be a problem for the Catholic Church, but.
Well, you don't have to be Catholic to admire him.
Right. But State House memorials have to be privately funded, and sometimes that can be a hang-up. I imagine it won't be in this case. I'm just curious how long it will take for the process to work to get his memorial here. We have one that was authorized last session on a women's suffrage memorial that's been working through the process.
Well, and
we also have ones from more than 20 years ago.
Yeah, the Buffalo Soldiers and the 1st Kansas Colored Infantry during the Civil War.
And the replica Ad Astra statue, since you were talking about statues on top of the dome, we have a replica that's sitting in storage.
To get that sucker on the dome, it was a fight. You know, there used to just be a big light bulb up there. You all are probably too young to remember that.
Well, and weren't you here? I think you were the one who told me the story of how they had the wrong bolts.
Yes, they had the wrong bolt. They brought it up and they were putting it in place. They had the wrong bolts and they had to bring it down. I actually have one of the bolts from the truck that carried the Ad Astra statue.
That's a find.
Yeah, well, they were going to throw it away. Just like the house, when the old press desk in the house, it had drawers on it, and I scavenged them when they were going to toss them. It's now on two of them are now on the table in my office.
Well, to look ahead.
Yes.
What more do we have left in session? We have this coming week. They'll do some conference committee.
Budget, taxes, maybe some abortion stuff, all the classics.
Yeah, we'll see how late into the night they go and how late into the week they go.
Yeah. Godspeed on that front.
And then we'll have a three-week break.
They come back the 29th of April.
And then they'll have a veto session and...
3 to 5 days, maybe, if we're lucky, and 15 or 20 if we're not.
Yeah.
You know, kids that 2013, 2015, 2017, some of those wrap-ups lasted more than four. I think one of them lasted like 42 days. Oof. Not fun.
How's Wisconsin doing?
They're done for the year. Both chambers.
I thought they were year-round.
They are year-round, which... is an object of consternation because they left without doing some fairly significant things. But yeah, they all wanted to go run for re-election. So the assembly wrapped up, I think, in late February. The Senate wrapped up in mid-March. So
how does that work when they go year-round? Do they just never stop? Or I guess it's like Congress and they take long breaks.
That's pretty accurate. The rhythm will kind of be shaped by, like, in a budget year, that kind of shapes the rhythm, and they'll be pretty busy in the first part of the year, pass the budget, and then go on a summer vacation, come back, wrap up things in the fall. And then in election year, they like to end early because, particularly this year, they all have to go run in new districts, or most of them have to go run in new districts. So they want extra time to, you know, go knock on doors and all that good stuff. So there's plenty to do because we're now in election mode. But I do look somewhat enviously on Kansas, only from the sense that in Wisconsin, it was kind of an anticlimactic end. I missed the – they gaveled out at 3 p.m. I mean, I missed the 3 a.m. When everyone's falling asleep and can't even debate the bills. But maybe I don't miss it that much.
Well, they have fewer legislators up there, right? It's 33 in the Senate and 99 in the House.
You're good, John. Yeah, they do it so that each Senate district has three assembly districts in it.
Yeah.
And it's
which if we just cut five House members, we could do that too.
You could.
You could – well, yeah, that's true, because under the Constitution, you couldn't add a 41st senator.
Really? And make it, in the Constitution?
Yeah. It's limited to 40 and 125. So you could cut five House members. I wonder who would get to decide which House members get to get cut. That would be a fun exercise, right, for some people in leadership or not.
Yeah.
You gotta look closely at how people have been voting.
You remember that song about Dennis Pyle, the man on fire?
Yeah,
oh, John, how could I forget?
Andy, can you sing it still?
And it had that line about yes, and it had that line with Tatum Lee and not getting a district in there, and it had pictures of her. That would be repeated if we went to 120 seats in the House. They could pull up some of the desks in the front and give themselves more breathing room between the podium and the people sitting.
Man, Tatum Lee Han, that's a deep cut, John. That's a Chaos Ledge deep cut.
Chaos Ledge deep cut. We're just they're going to be casual listeners. Are going, you know, it's going to be like me when I hear somebody discuss a reality TV star. I'm going to be like, who, what, who, why, and you know.
Well, if you are a casual listener and want to become a regular listener,
yes,
you can listen to back episodes wherever you found us today.
And you can hear the dulcet tones of Andrew Ball.
If you go back far enough.
And if you want to read more of our work, well, John, unfortunately, people can't read your work in the Cap Journal anymore, but they can still find it for free on apnews.com.
Yes. apnews.com/, yes, we're doing the hand motion. We used to do the hand motion all the time. author/ John-Hanna, H-A-N-N-A. And then I'm on Twitter at APJDHanna.
I don't know why we still give Twitter handles because I rarely use it anymore. But
well, I still tweet some.
Yeah.
Or are they Xlets or X's?
I think
or?
They're posts on X.
Posts on – that's cumbersome. Come on, Elon. Yeah. Come up with a shorter way to say that.
Maybe he would just want X's on X. All my X's live on X.
That's why I'm on Instagram.
But I'm at Jason_Alatid.
A great George Strait song, everybody.
You can find me at my author page at CJ Online. You could also find me on X, but like the other comments, I rarely use it as well.
KS Ledge Twitter really has not been as active as it was before you left.
We haven't even sure had the,
I killed cause, it. Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't have KS Ledge Valentine's this year, which I miss. So, Andrew, where can we find your work?
If you want to mix it up from just reading about Kansas, you can still find me.
And you do. You do. You want to be a citizen of the world.
I am on Twitter. I still try and tweet some at Andrew Ball, B-A-H-L, or you can go to captimes.com for my cheese and beer and meat related journalism.
That sounds very manly.
Yes.
Moink too.
Moink. Yes.
Yeah, you'll
How
have to
can
come
we
back
forget
for that?
Moink?
I was.
Does Jack know what moink? Do you know what moink I is? Have... Moink is a Kansas State Fair delicacy: bacon wrapped meatballs slathered in barbecue sauce. Moo oink moink.
Well, and you,
on a stick.
You
too.
Guys won't get a state fair debate this year.
Oh no. Yeah, that's right. Unless Donald Trump and Joe Biden come to Kansas for the state fair
Which
today.
That would be a sight.
That would be interesting. It'd go on for a while, wouldn't it?
Well, you guys can come up to Wisconsin and come to the Wisconsin State Fair.
Sure. Know. Do they do debates at the Wisconsin State Fair?
They don't, but it's still a fun time.
They can start. It's like my proposal for a Beyonce, Dolly Parton, Taylor Swift concert in the Flint Hills. I'm still on that. And Beyonce did cover her own version of Jolene, I know.
Which, bringing up Dolly Parton, we have now authorized in state statute that
the Imagination Library
can collect private donations.
Excellent. Promoting the good charity work of Dolly Parton.
And Andrew, you unfortunately were not good luck for the Kansas City Royals.
I was not. No, I came down for opening day and the Royals will need to find some luck of their own this season.
And none of us were good luck for our respective basketball teams.
That's also true.
None of them made it to Sweet 16 weekend. Some of them, like Jack's Missouri Tigers and my K-State Wildcats, didn't even make it to the tournament. The women's team did. It was a very fun atmosphere, just a really sad outcome for the round of 32 game. And John, your KU Jayhawks.
They won their
Both
first.
Both the men and women.
Yeah,
are
they
out.
The men won the first round and then flamed out in the second.
And I think
to Gonzaga, right?
Yep. And I think the women also lost in the second round.
And nope, no comment on my Badgers.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Badgers probably had the most promising, at least of our four men's teams here.
Yeah, and they laid an egg against James Madison. That's okay. We'll be back. My hockey team's in the NCAA tournament, too, so I have something to root for.
What's hockey?
Yeah,
that's not a sport here.
Isn't that a sport they play in India?
John, what?
Oh, wait, no, that's cricket. That has bats. Hockey is some other thing. Iceland, they play it in Iceland.
I'm glad John is still slipping in at least one kind of unhinged comment for a podcast. I was listening back to some old episodes and I found the one where you were commenting on Jason's honeymoon activities.
Yes, we were talking about that. Yes. Yes, is it? It's not allowed to repeat what I said, is it? Although there were no swear words in it.
No.
I just asked him whether he could feel the love that night because we were doing a Disney reference. It was a Disney reference.
Thinking of that, I was at my younger brother's wedding in Manhattan a couple weeks ago, and they did not play any Disney songs.
Boom!
That was just our wedding where basically every song was a Disney song.
Yes.
So in context, it kind of worked.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yes, but still.
Well, I don't
it
want to
came out wrong, is what you're saying.
A little bit, but it's okay. I don't want to keep you guys. You have work you probably need to do.
Yeah, or food we need to eat.
That's also true.
Yeah. Yes. Tacos, the unofficial State House podcast food.
You need to get Ink Tacos El Sol to a sponsorship deal.
Yeah.
The amount of earned media they get from this podcast is considerable.
Yes.
All right. Well, come back next week to read all of our work. We might not have time to podcast, unfortunately. But Welcome back, Andrew. We hope you enjoyed your time, and we hope the listeners enjoyed 100 episodes of Chillin' in the State House.